Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to film sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosie. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Good to have you all listening and being a part of the show. We appreciate that. I have a guest in studio who's going to hang out with me for the day. He is the co-founder of Public House Cinema, Daniel Jacobson. Hello, Daniel.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Do you need a lozenge?
I know. I've been battling a cold like most people.
I understand. It is fall. So don't know what the weather for you. It is fall.
Yep.
So publichousecinema.com. That's where you can go for information. But we're going to start with that. And yes, no, I didn't see Predator. We'll get to movies and other things going. And yes, we are going to, I'm going to have a part two on the Burt Reynolds filmography, because I know I did it a little bit with Erica, but there were still some things left unsaid last week. So we'll get to that. But I guess, Danny, let's start with, what is the origin of Public House Cinema?
Public House Cinema started between a buddy and I, just kind of at a bar where most good ideas happen, you know. Just drinking, you know, and it was around Oscar season, and we were just like kind of being like, why is there not an art house cinema downtown? Like, we have to go to Keystone, which Keystone's great.
We love Keystone.
We love it, and it's like the only place to see anything independent. So, but we were like, that's kind of crazy. We're a big city. Why don't we have another one to kind of lift up more independent film in Indianapolis? We just started naming other cities with downtown, even Fort Wayne. We're both from around Fort Wayne. And so we would go to there in high school, and they had a one-screen art house cinema. So we thought, and then we woke up. We talked about, you know, and our other buddy there was
You woke up after the bar.
Yes. Well, at the bar, we were like, we should do something about it. Maybe like start talking to people, or maybe a campaign to see if there's any energy to do this. And we woke up like, wait, that's still a good idea. We should do something about it. So
I'm sure we've all had those where, yeah, it is a great idea at 11 o'clock at a tavern.
Correct.
And then you wake up at, you know, 9 and they, yeah, that's actually kind of not bad.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing the, I remember in college, and hopefully you've not had that experience where you think you're Hunter Thompson and you just get a computer, you know, you get your keyboard and a bottle of vodka, and then you wake up the next morning with a hangover and pages of garbage. So
yeah, we've all been there.
But you have not done that. It became this.
Yeah. So we basically came up with the name, came up with a brand, only basically to kind of grassroots an energy to create a centrally located art house cinema. That's always been our main goal, a brick and mortar. And so we started doing that by showing films in breweries, parks, partnered with Big Car right away, because we knew they had equipment and they have the same kind of mission with placemaking. We thought this would be a perfect combination. So we met right away with Big Car, and we kind of got a partnership there right away to start programming. And we did our first one 2 years ago. At Metazoa, we showed Grizzly Man outside. We thought, you know, animal-themed brewery, animal documentary.
I still want Werner Herzog to do pledge spots for me. That's one of my dreams. So that's, and yeah, that was actually, I think, the second Werner Herzog film I showed my daughter after Encounters at the End of the World. She's fine, by the way. Gosh, that's good. Why don't you show Soylent Green in a restaurant while you're at it?
I know, right? But we've been, and then that started it, and we kind of been going, and we met up with some awesome partners who, at the same, it was just nice timing. They were looking for a building to do the same thing, and they met up with us, and we got like, wow, we all aligned. So they invited us to be on the team, and here we are working on the up-and-coming Art House Theater in Windsor Park.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I asked with the name, because public house, of course, implies that you have artisan food, you have farm to table, and you have drinks, whether they are coffee or alcohol, and there's always a story behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the case?
With where we're going?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, and, you know, public house cinema is always kind of a name to get us to an end. And so right now we're currently working on what we are going to brand and name the Windsor Park brick and mortar, because public house cinema is always kind of like a grassroots community. We kind of named it generically to be like, we want, that's our name implies what we want. We want a public house, a thing where people meet, talk, eat, and drink, but also it's a cinema where people can, where the conversations are all about movies. So
very good. I shameless plug, I'm directing a show this weekend at Richmond Civic Theater, and our final read through, we did not have a final dress rehearsal on Thursday. We had a reading at Roscoe's Coffee Shop in the Depot District in Richmond, and I've said many times that I think certain plays should be read and discussed in bars and coffee houses. I think there's a, at least in for my generation as well as yours, I'm sure there's a certain romantic, bohemian, big city feel of being in a place with liquids of various degrees of potency and discussing the arts and how much of an impact and how important they are in our everyday world.
Yeah, that was one of the main first conversations we ever had about the place we were creating is, I want people to be able to walk out of the theater and not have to go anywhere. They're like, there's a welcoming bar place right, you walk out of the theater, and then, because the conversation around movies, plays, art is just as important as the art itself.
Correct.
And that's
keeps
where
it
we,
alive. Keeps mm-hmm. it alive.
That's where, because if you go to a movie, three other people, you see something, everyone's going to have a different take, and you're going to, it's going to be a deeper experience when you have the conversation after.
Correct.
And it's like the coolest part.
Yeah, we're doing the opening night performance. We were asked constantly, are you doing a Q&A afterwards? I went, yeah, New Boswell down the street. So just at the mm-hmm. brewery. If you want to talk to us, go there and talk to us, as opposed to, and there's nothing wrong with you. I know we know there are Q&A sessions in theaters. We know the ones, but yeah, when you have a thing of liquid in your hand, that's even better. So,
yeah.
All right. So publichousecinema.com, and you have two events coming up on the 21st of September and October 4th. Go for it.
Yeah, September 21st, next Friday, we're doing a outdoor movie at the Fringe Pocket Park, the Fringe Theater on Mass Ave. We are showing North by Northwest, Hitchcock's film. That starts around 8:30. And fun addition, Tasting's wine truck will be there. So that'll be enjoyable.
It's a wave of it. But Martin Landau's not pouring.
No.
You don't want that. Because if he's pouring, he's going to try to kill you by putting you in a car.
Correct.
With bad green screen behind you. Now, there's nothing wrong with North by Northwest, but it is 50s technology.
Yes.
But and there's no cropper planes, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Okay. We're not doing those.
But tell Eva Marie Saint to call me.
I will.
All right. So that is happening. And again, you can go to publichousecinema.com. Mm-hmm. And then October 4th, you're doing a film that has a local slant to it, a local angle that we talked about from last year.
Yes, we're really excited. We're partnering with Cummins downtown. They built that gorgeous building downtown, and they have this gorgeous plaza at their distribution headquarters. So we thought, what a perfect idea to activate that space, show the movie Columbus, which takes place in Columbus, Indiana, and talks all about the architecture and the hidden beauty, if you know, that's in Columbus.
It is. You've heard the cliche that the location is a part in the film, and Columbus, Indiana is definitely that. It's kind of a, for lack of a better comparison, and I mean this as a compliment, it's kind of a lost in translation, but replace Tokyo with Columbus, Indiana, with two lost souls, not swimming in a fishbowl year after year, but you know, two individuals who wind up meeting, and they have their own issues, and they wind up bonding over kind of being lost souls.
Yeah, and I just watched Lost in Translation because I'll be going to Japan soon, so I had to. But it's
humble those, brag.
Yeah, I know. that connection is so true because they're both in very different places. The characters are in very different places in their life, but they find a connection. I think that's And then Columbus is a perfect backdrop for this film.
It's a beautiful looking film. It's an understated film. So yeah, you have two great opportunities to check those out. Now, we were talking before, and I guess we're gonna semi break this here at Film Sociology. This is hard hitting news, but there's another event that's gonna happen right after this.
Yes, it's in the works. The film is not 100%.
So it's TBA.
Yes,
everyone's favorite film.
But Big Car has this great event down in Garfield Park where it's the sunken beer gardens, where they turn the sunken gardens kind of into a beer garden. So you can come get beer, bring your dog, bring your kids, and you just hang out in the sunken gardens, which is the gorgeous, gorgeous part of Garfield Park. But on October 11th, we will be showing a horror-leaning silent film with a live musician performing the soundtrack. So we are currently working on all the details, but October 11th at the Sunken Gardens in Garfield Park, we'll be programming a film with Big Car.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you've never attended a film where they have live accompaniment, it's a can't miss. This is a rare opportunity. I know there have been ones like, or to a certain degree, like, well, I think it happens in L.A. where the Kronos Quartet played over Nosferatu. There's a wonderful theater. It's one of my favorite theaters in the world, the Music Box Theater on the north side of Chicago. And when I took my daughter Emma there, she was 11. And I hate myself for forgetting the title, but it's the only silent film that Gloria Swanson and Rudolph Valentino did together with live organ accompaniment. They have a great pipe organ in that space. So anyway, these pop up from time to time. So definitely hit that. And I think silent horror movies is a good gateway for youngins,
mm-hmm.
for kids. I mean, there's, I think that's the, you know, there's a reason why it's parental guidance and you're there with the kids. And but I think that's a really good start. That and sort of the universal stuff of the 40s and 30s. But good opportunity. So go check that out.
And just the technology alone, those films is so much fun to watch.
Like, exactly.
The practical effects.
You can actually tell this was actually a set. That thing was actually built. You know, real. Or as I went through a stretch with my daughter of real stunts done by real stunt people. So, yeah, that's not Fast and Furious. So. All right. So, yeah, go to publichousecinema.com for more information. All right. Opening in theaters this weekend. I got to see The Wife, the new film with Glenn Close, Jonathan Pryce, and Christian Slater. And it's Glenn Close plays the wife of a writer who is getting the Nobel Prize for Literature. And we get kind of an insight into the process of the Nobel Prize event as a whole. But as the film goes on and we go into flashbacks, we find out that the Glenn Close character has a lot more to do with his success than either he cares to admit or as we find out. So there's been a lot of really, really good buzz about Close's performance in this. I know she was on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. And she's been nominated several times and has not had the win. So, of course, the little press machine is moving in on that. And this is one of those films where the performance is much stronger than the film itself. It's a good. I think of Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart as an example of that. It's a wonderfully slow burning performance from Close, which we're kind of used to, especially after Fatal Attraction, and definitely after Dangerous Liaisons. It has that again that the bubbling underneath the surface, and if you've seen enough of these films, you kind of know where it's going to go. And then when there is finally the big confrontation between Glenn Close and Jonathan Pryce, two seasoned pros, by the way, I would say it's the acting equivalent to a boxing match, and the confrontation does not. It's not an explosion. It is still a slow burn, even when they're arguing with each other. And I think because they are such experienced artists, it does not turn into a shriek fest, I guess. That's probably the best way of putting it. So, but yeah, it's really good. And Christian Slater has a nice understated role as a writer who is working on a biography on the Jonathan Pryce character. But yeah, this is this is a sign that we are getting into grown-up movie season, where it's, you know, when we get in the fall and we're done with the blockbusters, and they'll still pop up here and there. But, yeah, we are in grown-up movie season, and so definitely go check out The Wife. This is the film's not going to make the top 10, my top 10 probably, but she is. So definitely go check that out. Okay, while we're at it, road tripping is always good for a film. So at IU Cinema, and this, of course, depends on when you're listening to the show. If you're listening for Saturday morning, thank you. You can still hightail it down at 4 o'clock at IU Cinema on Saturday the 15th, The Miseducation of Cameron Post. Chloe Grace Martz in the de-gaying camp film. And then at 7 o'clock from 1961, as a part of the East Asian film series, The Fantasy of Deer Warrior. On Sunday the 16th at 1 o'clock, Miseducation of Cameron Post. That's the only one. Monday the 17th, Jane, the documentary about Jane Goodall, is Monday the 17th at 7 p.m. Thursday, the September 20th at 7 p.m., the 2017 film Waru, as a part of the International Art House series. And then Friday the 21st at 4 o'clock, Tamer El Said is listed. This Jorgensen guest filmmaker program will be in the form of an extended onstage interview. And then at 7 o'clock from 2017, Elsed's film In the Last Days of the City. And then Saturday the 22nd, Waru at 4 p.m., In the Last Days of the City at 7 p.m. And then Sunday the 23rd, ladies and gentlemen, here's your double feature. Are you ready for this, Daniel?
I'm ready.
1 o'clock, Persona, as a part of the Bergman in the 60s series. 4 o'clock, The Maltese Falcon. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, go to that.
It's good you said something. I've been meaning to watch Persona again just because, yeah, I watched it years ago, but it just does not leave your brain. And to see it in the gorgeous IU Cinema would be...
To see that, and then you've got an hour and a half to chill before getting into... And then you cleanse your palate with the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah.
See, this is what I love about IU Cinema is... It's at times the scheduling equivalent of what movies are on piled up on your player. It's just they're not planned, and this is the Persona is the Bergman in the 60s series, which is happening there, and then Maltese Falcon is the Other Films and Guest series. But wow,
yep,
yeah,
keeps it fun.
I like that. So I don't know if I'm working on the 23rd. I will have to check that out. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool because there are certain films I've instructed this, especially with young couples, is like if you go see Persona, don't go see Persona and then go to bed.
Yes.
You need to cleanse your palate.
Yep.
Bob's Burgers, Archer, something. You
something.
Know, Parks and Rec. Or in this case, The Maltese Falcon. So
it's right there.
That's tremendous. I love that. Let's go down a little more. Monday the 24th, the 1950 film Never Fear, Young Lovers. Okay. Thursday the 27th, Luz Obscura is a part of director Susana de Sousa Diaz. She's scheduled to present the film. And here's another double feature. Friday, September 28th, as a part of the Bergman of the 60s series, at 7 o'clock, Hour of the Wolf. 10 o'clock, They Live. As a part of their not-quite-midnight movie series.
Yes. Is that the John Carpenter
yes,
film?
Yes, with Roddy Piper and Keith David and the glasses.
Yep. The glasses. He sees the people. Yeah. There we go.
There's another great double feature. You can cleanse your palate with John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. You were saying.
No, that's funny that got brought up because we were just talking about that with a friend of mine yesterday, that film.
They Live?
Yeah.
Really?
It came up random in conversation.
That's why we do what we do here.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Saturday, September 29th at 4 o'clock, the City Lights film series She Done Him Wrong from 1933. That's Mae West and Cary Grant. And then Liquid Sky from 1982 at 7 o'clock is a part of the Underground film series. That's another, double feature. Sunday, September 30th, Love is Potatoes at 1 o'clock as a part of the Documenting Russia series. And then 4 o'clock as a part of the President's Choice series, Zabriskie Point. Whew! That's pretty – but my God, those are two great double features involving Ingmar Bergman and other people. Mm-hmm. That's solid. Okay. I think it became official this week, but Keystone Arts has announced their midnight movie series for October. So I will.
Exciting.
We will get your thoughts. Have you been to one of these?
Yeah, I love that. They kind of do midnight movies throughout the year, but the October ones are very specific.
Yeah, they do them in the summer.
Yep.
That's where you get to see The Room. I try to see them both nights if possible. But yeah, and of course the October ones are a little more October centric.
Yep.
So October 5th and 6th. It's a new digital restoration, Wes Craven's The Hills Have Eyes. Don't watch the remake. Remake's all right. But mm-hmm. yeah, this is Craven, obviously pre-Scream and pre-Nightmare on Elm Street, mm-hmm. when these were low budget and just disturbing. October 12th and 13th, the Japanese film House.
I'm going to be there for that one.
Are you?
I need to see that on a big screen. Yeah.
Okay. When was the last time you watched it? I have not seen it.
I have
it,
not so seen I'm, it.
Oh, you have? Okay.
No, so I thought it
implied you saw it on a small screen. Sorry.
I just was going to track it down this October to watch it.
Well, there you
and
go.
So now I'm like, I did not know. So that's super exciting. So I will be there.
The 12th and 13th. Yeah. And then October 19th and 20th, Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. And then October 26th and 27th, the 30th anniversary, Beetlejuice. And
30th anniversary, that's exciting.
Yep, I saw it in theater. So, yes, I did. And I got to get Emma to my daughter to that. So, many, many years ago, the last time Keystone Arts had Beetlejuice, Emma really wanted to go. I think she was 10, maybe, 11. And I, at the time, was uncertain because I said, and not because of the content, because she has seen, you know, under the guidance of her parents, she's seen a lot, and theater and film, and we think that's constructive, and you can raise your kids in pop culture and not be vegetables. So there are the moments that I call pop culture Atticus Finch. So I said, all right, because my fear is I'm going to look over at, like, you know, 12:30 and she's going to be asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you need to watch a midnight movie at home first, and if you can stand it, then we'll go.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember it was January. I was here. We were staying at my in-laws' house for the night because it was very, very snowy. And I get home about 10. I get to the house about 10:30 or so, and I always have a bag of movies with me. Yeah, I still carry disc. Get over it. And at 10:30, my daughter goes, "I want to take the test tonight." And I said, "Great, go in the bag, pick out a movie." She picked Pulp Fiction. So we waited until midnight and then started the movie. And I believe Jackie Brown was her first Tarantino film. She's fine. we get to 2:45 a.m. and she loved the movie. And then the only thing she said was she took my hand and we stood up and then she said, "Walk me through it." Meaning she wanted to go in chronological where it began.
Mm-hmm.
We did that, and she was fine. So
here we go.
She has taken her test, and then, you know, life and things have just gotten in the way, and we will maybe, hopefully this month, I can get her to a midnight movie October.
Very appropriate pick for a midnight movie. It's long, though, but, you know.
I know. I was like, wow, you're really okay. All right. And it was great because the next day, she wanted to watch both Kill Bills.
Mm.
And so as a proud dad, of course. Yeah. I wound up bragging about this on social media, not telling my wife, who was the first one to respond. I think she wrote UGH, and then I responded with, uh-oh. So we sat through both Kill Bills the next day, my wife occasionally looking up from her laptop, saying, okay, what's happening? Oh, all right. So, mm-hmm. yeah, so there was that. All right, so anyway, that is Midnight Movies at Keystone Arts in October, so hope to see you there. It is still warm enough to go out to the drive-ins. When was the last time you went to a drive-in, sir, or have you?
I've been. It was,
you
it's
have.
Been a long time.
You have a two in your age, so pardon me if I'm an old person asking things.
It's all good. No,
do you remember what you saw?
That is a good question.
That's why I ask.
Oh, it was, is early in, like, when the comic book films were getting big, but Jennifer Gardner, there's knives involved.
Elektra?
Yes, that was one of them. It was a double feature. And
right.
And Elektra was, second one.
Ooh.
I know. Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know if the Elektra versus Peppermint crossover film is going to happen. I watched it last week. Yeah. Wow.
It's been a while.
She's fun to look at, though.
Yeah.
I'm a pig male, sorry. All right, so at the Tibbs Drive-In. Okay, ooh. Now, in my day, and I'm very old, but, you know, there were, sometimes you get odd pairings, so I always check this, some really, really bizarre pairings. And when I was a kid, you could have pairings of films, and the second feature didn't have to be a new title. Like I remember when Dudley Moore made it big with, he made it huge, made it big with 10, made it even bigger with Arthur. And remember, they opened with Arthur, and then the second film was 10. And that's a two-year-old fixture by that time. So anyway, but yeah, sometimes you just get, I'm like, is it same rating, same studio, one for the parents, one for the kids, one for him, one for her. So anyway, screen one at the Tibbs, A Simple Favor. That's the Anna Kendrick, Blake Lively noir. So, or I think somebody wrote, it's a book, mom's book club version of Gone Girl. I don't know. So anyway, A Simple Favor with Crazy Rich Asians. And kudos to Crazy Rich Asians for being a huge hit.
I know. It's doing really well in the box office.
Hopefully, it will open up. And I believe I think the male lead in Crazy Rich Asians is also in A Simple Favor. So let's not have the Joy Luck Club syndrome and just have one ensemble picture with that group of actors and then nothing. So benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
Screen two, The Nun and the Meg. Nuns and Shark. Yeah, two thes. Oh, boy. Screen three, The Predator, because I'm old, and Peppermint. Whew. Okay. Did you see the last Predator film?
I did not.
Neither did I. I saw Peppermint. I guess it'll remind people that Jennifer Garner can do films where she kicks butt.
There we go.
I wish Eli Roth had directed her in Death Wish instead of other things. Screen four, Christopher Robin and The Incredibles 2.
There you go.
Yeah, so something for the kids.
Yep.
And don't be the kids that look over the other screen watching other things while you're supposed to be there. So anyway, that is at the Tibbs. At the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville. Well, here you go. The Predator and the Meg.
Makes sense.
There you go. At the Historic Art Craft Theater, the next film event they have going is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, September 27th through the 29th, a 35mm print of the original Ghostbusters.
That's exciting.
That will be fun. That's good.
That'll be great.
Yep. So that is happening at Historic Art Craft Theater. Okay. New on DVD and Blu-ray, I finally got to watch Ocean's 8. Little full disclosure, my family have had a streak of seeing films with not only without me but before me, which is it's kind of embarrassing when you're a film show host. But one of them was Ocean's 8. Now, full disclosure, I've been in rehearsal mode, so my evenings have been taken away from me, and it's a cute film, and I don't mean that in a condescending way. We all know women can do things. I'm also looking really forward to the next ensemble female crime film, Widows, from director Steve McQueen, the man who gave us 12 Years a Slave.
Yes, that one looks great. The trailer looks good. I'm really excited about Widows.
I think Widows and Ocean's 8 is a must.
Mm-hmm.
That should happen at every drive-in. That should have. I mean, theater should. I know you don't make money doing double features, but you should really have that as a double feature. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Helena Bonham Carter, Anne Hathaway, Mindy Kaling, and others, sorry, and the rest of the crew. And it's an Ocean's film for ladies. And unlike, and my daughter pointed this out, unlike the female remake of Ghostbusters, the Oceans, this particular Oceans film is very female centric. It is the target is a diamond necklace. The scene is a huge fashion show. So it's not like they're robbing a casino. So the fact is, you have really talented actresses having a fun time and being able to have their own version of a heist, as opposed to, yeah, it's just like a generic crime film.
Yeah.
The one setback, and it's a minor quibble, is if you've seen any of the Ocean's films, you know there's going to be sort of a twist near the end but you enjoy yourself nonetheless. So it is a fun dessert film. So definitely check that out. Also out on Blu-ray, and yeah, I saw it, was the remake of Superfly.
I did not.
Well, not a lot of people did.
Yeah,
and I'm a huge 70s blaxploitation fan, so, and I understand we are now going through a phase. I'm now old and on the front stoop of, you know, well, it's a title people know. So now we're getting films like, we're getting remakes of Point Break and Papillon and now Superfly, and there will be others where, mm-hmm. well, people sort of know that title. I will say that the original Superfly film, which I absolutely adore, with Ron O'Neill and the great soundtrack by Curtis Mayfield, you know, it is the original Superfly is a great 70s soul album. The remake of Superfly is a 2010 autotone dance mix.
Mm-hmm.
And your lead is not bad, and they don't try to, you know, they set it in Atlanta instead of New York, and they do still follow the plot for the most part. And yeah, there's a little Curtis Mayfield samples here and there, uses of songs. But I think I've become the guy that I recognize the sample and I'm going to point it out where it's from.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I felt watching the remake of Superfly. So yeah, just watch the original. And if you're really into it, I guess you can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have the same impact as, say, the Sam Jackson Shaft, which was okay.
Yeah.
You know, I guess if you need somebody head to toe in leather and black leather and attitude, it's Sam Jackson's a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Did Hereditary come out this week also?
That came out last week.
Okay.
Your thoughts on that? Don't watch it with your family.
No, don't watch it with your family. I heard crazy buzz about it in Sundance, so I purposely, my buddy also did the same thing, did not watch any trailer going into it. So
I just went in.
I knew it was
going
to be scary, but just went into it. And I'm happy I did, because I watched the trailer afterwards, and I'm like, I'm happy I just did not get to know what it was even about.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed it. I need to see it probably two more times to unpack what's going on.
I think so, because I had seen the trailer, and then watching it, I knew there is a combination of psychological thriller and a ghost story.
Yeah, and like family melodrama.
Family melodrama.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a, because the only thing I really knew going in was, I think one of the biggest fears is that you become your parents, especially
mm-hmm.
after they die.
Yep.
And that your soul. So, but the, I think the, I'm giving hand signals because I don't want to give it away on the air. But there's almost a subplot in the last quarter that I didn't see coming.
No.
That took me a little bit more. I'm like, oh, we're going to go down this path.
Correct. I was the same.
Okay.
Same exact. I was like, oh, we're going here. And I think the second watch, I'll be ready for it. So it'll make more sense.
You're able to connect the dots easier.
Correct.
And, okay.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad we had this vague chat. But go rent it. And Toni Collette's great.
She is amazing. I love her in general, and she just does a killer job.
Yeah, and it's an exhausting performance. She is asked to do, I mean, there are two types of audience members, I think. There are sitters and there are thinkers. And the sitters can think and thinkers can sit, but I think you're really rooted in one. And you know, a sitter can just let the film wash over them, and then they go home and they have a good time, and then they go to bed. And that's it. And then sitter, but I think you can also, if you're a savvy enough thinker, you can watch it while it's still going on, and still get engrossed in it, but still think. And I think of the scene early on, without giving away a whole lot, but there is a scene with Toni Collette crying on the floor. That's exhausting to do, folks. I've not had to do that type of acting, but you watch that going, oh, my God.
What you have to get into.
What you had to get into. Hopefully the director wasn't Kubrick. You know, she maybe had to do it once, maybe twice, but oh, my gosh. It's that kind of exhausting. And to have to go from, I mean, there are shifts in tone of anger and fear and sadness and lost. And she covers all of these bases like a champ.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go rent Hereditary. And there's been a really nice trend of grown-up scary movies.
Yes. I don't track down every horror film, but there is this really nice trend with the independent horror community, thriller community, that's putting some really thought or thinking, you know, horror with...
It's not the dumb teenager.
Yeah.
It's not the dumb slasher movies.
They're putting some thought into it and, like, why, you know, their metaphors in those...
It Follows is another one. I think maybe to a lesser degree, something like But Don't Breathe.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and even A Ghost Story, which I actually really liked, and it's not... Don't let the title... The title's a little deceiving, but it's still pretty cool.
That was last year, correct?
Uh-huh. The Witch. The Witch is another great one.
Yep.
Really, really solid stuff. So, yeah, they are out there, and they kind of help balance out The Nun and the other stuff from the Conjuring series and Paranormal whatever. So, anyway, those are out there. Also out on Blu-ray Criterion, I believe this is... They're doing the full director's cut. Oh, boy. Of Terrence Malick's The Tree of Life.
That's right.
So
the full director's cut. So is that different than what was?
I think I don't know if there's more dinosaurs.
That's just not my question.
There's
was.
More. We'll have to look on that. Yeah, you might want to check that out. But hold on a second here.
I'm on board with Tree of Life. I'm not on board with all of Malick's recent films, but
no.
That one.
Because we find out, and the reason why there are dinosaurs in Tree of Life, and I don't think I'm really giving away a whole lot here, but it is, we have some really, really understated work from Brad Pitt and especially Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
And that was her year. I believe she did like 5 films and she was just rock solid in all of them. But it's the, what happens in small town Texas in the 50s. To borrow a line from Animal House, is one single atom on the fingernail of one teeny giant universe. So, and that's where I think the dinosaurs and the whole, the beginning of, you know, the prequel of Mankind. And then we balance it out with Sean Penn roaming on the beach. And, Sean Penn still says he still doesn't know what the film is about. I was on board with this. I have a rule now after, I think it was after Tree of Life. I like Terrence Malick films to be 80 minutes.
That's a good.
It's like the grind. I have a Grindhouse rule because of the film Grindhouse, the theatrical version. There is a lot of action films that would just be better if they were 70 minutes.
There's a lot of films like there, that,
and probably a lot of films,
a lot of documentaries.
But,
no, Terrence Malick.
Terrence Malick, give us some visually stunning 80-minute films.
Yep, I saw Song to Song.
Yeah, that's a great example.
And I was on board with the setting's great, kind of what he's like.
The improv feel about it.
It's cool. The non-narrative. I like what he's doing with filmmaking. It's just you get 60%, 70%, and you're like, okay, we're still doing this, and because you feel like he made a statement already at that point.
Kinda.
And I hear people that love him, and I totally get it because he's pushing filmmaking. But
I still want the 5-hour Thin Red Line.
Mm.
I want all of the Nolte and Travolta and Clooney scenes. I'm on board with that. I still think Thin Red Line is better than Saving Private Ryan, but I'm in the minority on that. But he needs to tone it back a little bit. Let's see, other old titles. Well, and there's also there were times like I thought this was already put out on Blu-ray, but that's okay. Big Wednesday. I have a soft spot for surfer films, and I mean the Frankie and Annette films of the '60s. But Big Wednesday is a 1978 drama. This is the Warner Archive Collection, so you have to order this. You can't get it in stores, but it's I think the directorial debut of John Milius. who co-wrote and directed this, and it's Jan Michael Vincent, William Catt, Gary Busey, and it's three California surfers from the, I think, the early 60s through the early 70s. So there is, and I was thinking about this film because I also picked up some late 60s, early 70s recordings of the Beach Boys. And there's, early on, there is this kind of fun, frolicking, surfing, drinking, chasing girls aspects of it. And then we get into the Vietnam War and the counterculture that's happening in the country at that time. And then a reunion that they have at the end. It looks cool. And, you know, this is pre-crazy Busey. Well, you know, as crazy as he can be. And, you know, this is when Jan Michael Vincent was a bankable star, and William Catt. This is before Great American Hero. And but anyway, I think it's a really cool look at lost youth and when you have to start putting away childish things.
And it's called Big Wednesday.
Big Wednesday.
I'm going to have to check this out.
1978. Yeah.
I got a soft spot for surfer films. Just growing up in the Midwest, you know, you put there's a lot of.
You
like,
think everything looks like Frankie and Annette and yeah. Gidget and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are strange. but I do. But I was emceeing a festival in Fishers a couple of weeks back, and the Nickel Plate Amphitheater, shout out, right next door is the Fishers Public Library. And I'm a big fan of library sales. I like getting – yeah, I still get movies and albums from the library, and it helps them.
It's, like,
it's cheap.
It's my Netflix DVD.
There you go.
I got one right by in my neighborhood, and I use it all the time.
Exactly. So I found – and I knew this was out at least a decade ago, but Capitol Records had put out two albums on one disc of the late 60s, early 70s recordings of the Beach Boys. And they were remastered because this is after Pet Sounds, because what you know, Pet Sounds is one of the great rock albums of all time, and Brian Wilson, thank goodness, you know, was able to push the envelope. And of course, the Beatles were so intimidated that they made Sgt. Pepper. So there's that. But then, you know, Wilson was going to follow it up with Smile, which
yep.
didn't happen.
Sadly, yeah.
They wound up making, I think it was Smiley Smile, which is, yeah, that's where, I mean, Good Vibrations is the one of the best example of what came out of those sessions. But it was also not a well-received album because it wasn't Pet Sounds and it wasn't Smile. But like Wild Honey and Surf's Up, and they were growing up. And the music was changing, and there was I've forgotten that there was a story that they were supposed to play the Monterey Pop Festival, and they decided not to do it because they felt out of date. They felt out of touch with that era, that they were still looked at as, you know, the clean-cut surfer kids from the early 60s. So anyway, I finally got to hear Wild Honey and Surf's Up and a couple other albums, and they're good albums. They're, you know, is it playing on oldies satellite radio? No, it should, but no. So that anyway, that I had been thinking about that lately, and so yeah, your old title this week, Big Wednesday. All right, you're listening to Film Sociology here at WFYI. I'm Matthew Soucy, hanging out with Daniel Jacobson, the co-founder of the Public House Cinema. You're in your early 20s?
30s.
You're 30s?
I know. I look young.
You do look young.
I get carded everywhere I go.
I'm really sorry.
No, it's all good. It's not an insult. It's a compliment. I'm going to be...
Wow.
That's going to be... I shouldn't take that as an insult. That's
okay.
A compliment.
Jeez, I'm terrible with ages, folks. All right. So I talked about this a little bit last week, and there was still some stuff I wanted to cover, but I wanted to get your thoughts on Burt Reynolds. I know I'm hitting you with this out of nowhere.
No, it's great. No, he's, you know, we've all seen him in films, but the first time I was like conscious, I think seeing Boogie Nights, and I was like,
wow.
Well, you
good
know, you're
start.
You're older, and yeah. it was like, oh, because you knew who he was, but it was more of like I was a conscious watcher at that point.
Okay,
you know, I guess in my film watching career, where you're like, he was just so good, so good.
I was talking, and if I'm repeating myself from last week, sorry, but I'm close to 50, so I remember seeing Smokey and the Bandit in the theater when I was 7. So that I was there during that time when he was the top draw 5 years in a row, gang. That's unheard of.
That's
kind of like being the MVP 5 years in a row. I mean, that's you know, that's LeBron Jordan stuff. But, you know, while as big a star as he was, he was fiercely loyal to Hal Needham. There's a great documentary that CMT put out called The Bandit, and it's not only about the making of Smokey and the Bandit, but it's also a mini biopic on Reynolds and Needham and their friendship. He was fiercely loyal. So those films were going to happen. I had to remind a group of guys I hang out with, but, you know, this is a man who was directed by Woody Allen, John Borman, Robert Aldrich, Stanley Donen, Peter Bogdanovich, Norman Jewison, Alan Pakula, Michael Crichton, and then later people like Paul Thomas Anderson. So when he, and Bill Forsythe, there's a really underrated film from 1989 called Breaking In. It's directed by Bill Forsythe, the man who gave us Local Hero, and it's written by John Sayles. And it's a really nice understated picture.
That list was incredible, by the way.
Yeah, I mean he's worked with all of them, and so. It was fun to watch him actually have to act. There's a lot of those films, like the car films, where he was able to coast on his charisma, and sometimes it worked, and sometimes it didn't. And of course, he got a lot of money. He got more money for doing those than say Boogie Nights or Breaking In or probably Deliverance. And yep. Yes, he still regrets the centerfold in Cosmopolitan. So. But yeah, I specifically remember Sharky's Machine, which opened, I remember it because it opened December 19th, 1981, my 12th birthday. And I begged my father to take me to it, and he took me to it with my grandmother, who counted all the curse words. Sharky's Machine is an underrated picture. It's kind of his Dirty Harry. He directed it, and it's based on a novel from William Deal. He plays a cop who's going after a big-time pimp in Atlanta. It's the film that introduced the world to Rachel Ward. It was also a precursor, with the exception of Clint Eastwood, apparently you were not allowed to be funny in cop films. So this is before 48 Hours. This is before Lethal Weapon. Reynolds had already established himself as a director with Gator and The End, and then he made, and the story goes that he and Eastwood, who were friends, Eastwood at the time, this was in the late 70s, at the time didn't know if he wanted to do Every Which Way But Loose, and because it kind of made fun of his he's not known for comedies, and it kind of makes fun of his tough guy persona, especially when you're doing a movie with an orangutan. and apparently Reynolds said, if you do this movie, I'll make Dirty Harry Goes to Atlanta. And then when Sharky's Machine opened, Eastwood sent him a note going, you weren't kidding. The other fun Clint Burt story that's not City Heat, which I wish somebody had made that better. But they were both fired from Universal at the same time in the 50s. They were both contract players. And it was said Eastwood was fired because his Adam's apple stuck out too far and he had a chipped tooth and he talked too slow. And Reynolds said, well, why am I fired? And the executive said, you can't act. And as they're walking out of the lot, Reynolds looks at Eastwood and says, you know, you're in a hell of a lot of trouble. And Clint says, why? And he goes, well, because I can learn to act, but you're never going to be able to get that Adam's apple out of your throat. And that's where that story came. So, yeah. And I revisited Deliverance, which is still a great film, and it's still way more than The Scene.
Yeah.
So a reminder, when Ned Beatty dies, it's going to be really unfair. His coverage of his career and his life is going to be extremely unfair because of that. But I watched Boogie Nights again, and you know I really wish he had liked it. I really, really do.
I hear that he wasn't like the biggest fan of it. But.
He clashed with Paul Thomas Anderson, yeah. And I think part of it was a generational thing.
I think so too. Paul Thomas Anderson was really young.
Yeah,
I mean,
this was his second film. He had already done Hard Eight.
Yep.
Great film, and. My guess is, because I wasn't there, but you know, the guess is he was not treated like a movie star.
Yeah, I don't think, because I don't think he treats anyone.
Like, no, he does not. And his method of directing is different than I think the directors of the 60s and 70s that Reynolds was used to. There was one guy, I believe there was a story that he punched out a director while making the film Heat. Not that Heat, another Heat, based on the novel by William Goldman in the late 80s. So, yeah, part of it was that. I think part of it was obviously the subject matter, you know, pornography. Never forget, ladies and gentlemen, Boogie Nights is a film about finding a family. It just so happens that it's in the porn industry in the 70s.
Yep.
but you know, they need families too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I kind of obviously wish he'd liked that more. And then the follow-ups to that, oh boy, let's see. Well, I know he wound up doing some films. He did some films with TNT. I know he cashed in with that. Mm-hmm. And then also appeared in a couple of Universal Soldier films, sequels, that were, I think, made for TV or for video. So, yeah, didn't quite. I know he was in Mystery Alaska, and I know he was in Driven. Oh, boy.
Yep, I'm looking through.
You're looking through the timeline?
Yeah, Without a Paddle. We got some.
Yeah, there's some. I know he. And The Longest Yard. Yep. You know what? I will say, the other fun story about The Longest Yard is Eddie Albert, who played the warden in the original Longest Yard. I remember this. He died the day before the remake opened.
Oh, no.
So take that for what it's worth. Yeah. Yeah, and he's fun as Boss Hogg and Dukes of Hazzard. But yep. I think you look at those titles that you just mentioned, that, you know, they rolled out the red carpet for him.
Yep.
Because he's the elder statesman. Yep. And getting that respect. So,
which he deserves.
I get that.
Did you see the last movie star?
I did.
Okay, popped up because of what happened, and I was like, I didn't catch that, and it looked, I need to see it.
There have been a number of kind of independent films where actors of a certain age get to kind of flex their muscles a little bit.
Hero?
Exactly. Yeah. And that guy made I'll See You in My Dreams, mm-hmm. which was Blythe Danner's film. Mm-hmm. Of course, Hello, My Name is Doris with Sally Field, which is another one of those. And the timing wasn't the best because those films are good. And Last Movie Star is good. I probably would have gotten a stronger response if those other films had not been made.
Got it. Kind of got lumped into a category.
It got lumped into that mm-hmm. category. So, and yeah, he is frayed. He is in his 80s making that thing, and it, you know, walking with the cane, and it shows. But I have to give, Adam Rifkin specifically wrote, you know, you always hear that he specifically wrote this for Bert, and it's a story of an aging movie star who's asked to attend a film festival, and he does not know going in that it's a fan festival. So it's not Heartland, it's something smaller. But and he winds up forming an odd friendship with Ariel Winter, but there's scenes of older self talking to younger self in the canoe and in the Trans Am. So yeah, he literally made this for him. And if he didn't, obviously if he didn't agree to do it, it was not gonna happen.
No,
so
yeah.
So yeah. Kind of like my talk with Elvis Presley on the show earlier this year with John Krull, you know, great star, but also great what could have been's and in what to do and maybe what not to do in show business.
Mm-hmm.
So salute, Bert. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. We just got a few more minutes, and I came across, and I believe IU Cinema is doing a retrospect on filmmaker Michael Schultz. Have you ever seen Car Wash?
No.
Okay. This was an ensemble comedy mm-hmm. from 1976, and it's a day in the life of a car wash in Los Angeles, written by a young Joel Schumacher, who I talked earlier had done Sparkle, the original Sparkle, which was talked about on the show, and a lot of familiar faces at that time: Antonio Fargas, George Carlin, Franklin Ajai, young Bill Duke, Ivan Dixon, Pepe Serna, Richard Pryor has a cameo, the Pointer Sisters, and it's on Blu-ray. I got it on Blu-ray, and Schultz does a commentary track, which is fun. This was a movie. I recorded it off of Betamax, off of NBC, and I watched this thing a lot. It's just a and what Schultz was talking about, this was one of those films that they weren't, nobody, the studio wasn't paying attention to the movie, because at the same time that this was being made, Jaws was being made, so all attention was on that. So I really like the smaller films of the 70s and early 80s that are not the blockbusters. They got to put something out.
Yeah, and they kind of got to do what they want, I'm sure, because they didn't have that larger person over the top of them.
And Schultz, who was a new filmmaker at that time, and it was, you know, not a whole lot of African-American directors at that time, but it was also a mixture. It kind of has an Altman light feel mm-hmm. to it, because it's a sprawling ensemble. And there's shifts in tone of dramatic and comedic, and you know, this is, I don't believe dramedy had been created yet, so the studio was really concerned at the shifts in tone. Bill Duke plays a young revolutionary who's kind of stuck on this job, and he's just a seething boil waiting to burst. And the Ivan Dixon character, who is older and is kind of the father figure in the group, and he's got his own issues with family and his past. And Richard Pryor shows up as a street preacher who's really about money. So there's some I mean, there's some really funny stuff. But the other thing about this film was there was enough stuff that was shot that there's footage that in the feature film that didn't make it to television. Antonio Fargas plays a flamboyantly gay character that's not in the original broadcast. They shot enough, as I said, that they put other stuff in the television version that's not in the actual film. Caddyshack went through this as another example. But there is a hot dog stand next to the car wash, and it's a bickering couple played by a young Brooke Adams and a young Danny DeVito. Did not make the film, but made the television version. So interesting that those things, and there's a couple other moments. There's Melanie Mayron, who was an actress at that time, has now directed a slew of other things, but there is a subplot with her. She's the kind of the well-endowed woman behind the mm-hmm. counter who may or may not be doing things with her boss, but she meets a young man for a date. And it's a happy ending in the film, not a happy ending in the broadcast version. And I'm kind of glad that the original film version keeps it the way it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a fascinating, it's a fun film. Yeah. It's not groundbreaking, but it's a lot of fun. Great soundtrack by Rolls-Royce. I know the song Car Wash has been used in other things over the years, especially when you have a sequence in a car wash. So anyway, but it was fun to revisit that, so that is out there. So Daniel, we got a couple of minutes left. What have you watched recently? Old, new, indifferent, whatever.
Yeah, I've been pretty busy, but
I know.
I went to New York for a little art house cinema road trip, and I saw three movies that were all great. But I saw Black Klansman, saw a Spike Lee movie, which was super entertaining.
Very fun.
I saw Your Name, which is an anime film that came out, I think, a year or two ago. It's the highest grossing anime film, actually, to this date. And I didn't catch it when it came to Keystone, and it was great.
Wow.
It's a small movie that gets really big. I guess it's like about connections with people and yeah.
And what was the third?
The third one was Madeline's Madeline, and it was Josephine Decker's new film, and it really kind of shook me. It's like halfway through, it's like I don't know if I'm on board, but then by the ending, I was totally on board. It's a smaller film. I don't know if it'll get to Indianapolis. I think actually IU Cinema had it. I think maybe last week I just saw, but Madeline's Madeline. If you're up for something unique.
Okay.
Go check it out.
All right. So just a reminder, North by Northwest is happening Friday, September 21st. Where is that happening again?
That is at the Fringe Theater.
And then Columbus, October 4th.
And that is at Cummins headquarters downtown.
And Columbus is free. North by Northwest is not. We can't talk ticket prices. We're public radio.
You got it.
But go to publichousecinema.com for all the information. So, Daniel, thank you for hanging out.
Yeah, thanks so much. This was fun.
Great. We'll have to get you back on soon.
For sure.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. And shout out to my cast and crew of the Christians at Richmond Civic Theater. GoRCT.org. But thanks for your hard work, gang. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
Pull the string! Pull the string!
No. That's not what I said.
Shut up! My God! You have no freaking life!
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!